This is week three of our four-part series on water, called Water is Life. We started the series in week one, interviewing a healthcare provider about the importance of water to our health, and we interviewed the City of Sandpoint personnel on how water is treated, tested, and delivered to city residents. Last week, experts on the Ice Age flood told us how our lake was formed, and a meteorologist explained how weather replenishes that water and how the seasonal precipitation pattern impacts us.
Today, in part three, we will hear from two people who know about uses of water in our region and how that use is regulated. But before we get to those interviews, we have some trivia, fun facts to share with you. And you know, Gene, this part of it is always fun because you learn new things. Correct. So, in 1993, the United Nations General Assembly designated March 22nd as the first World Water Day. And with good reason. Without water, we'd be nothing, just dust. Water is one of the most common substances on Earth and one of the most vital. It's a tremendously valuable resource. And Gene, did you know? And a lot of people know this. The average human body is made of 50 to 65% water, but a newborn baby has even more, ringing in at 78% water. A little bit about how water, what it weighs. A gallon of water weighs 8.34 pounds. A cubic foot of water weighs 62.4 pounds. And a liter of water weighs 1 kilogram. Just some little facts about that.
And Susie, did you know 97% of the water on Earth is salt water? The water found in the Earth's lakes, rivers, streams, ponds, swamps, everything else, accounts for only 0.3% of the world's fresh water. The rest is trapped in glaciers or is in the ground. And more than one quarter of all bottled water, which we're going to talk about more next week, but bottled water comes from a municipal water supply, the same place that your tap water comes from.
Very interesting.
Now to our interviews, which were recorded earlier in the week. Our first interview is with Molly McCann from the Lakes Commission. We're joined today by Doug Jones, Northern Regional Manager at the Idaho Department of Water Resources. Doug works in Coeur d'Alene and is on the phone with us. Thanks for being with us today, Doug.
Well, good afternoon, ladies. Delighted to be asked to participate.
It's very nice to have you here. And Doug, please tell us what you do and your role at the Idaho Department of Water Resources.
Sounds good. I'm, as Susie said, I'm the regional manager for the office. Our area covers everything from Elk City down in Idaho County up to the Canadian border and east and west. All the way. So it covers quite a lot of territory, and we have a lot of folks and a lot of different interests in there. I've worked for the department for 30 years now. Most of it, in fact, I just moved up to Northern Idaho, back up to Northern Idaho, last year. But so most of my experience is in the Twin Falls area with the department. The department administers several programs authorized by statute in the state. One of these is water rights and adjudication of water rights, and the others are well construction, stream channel alterations, and dam safety administration. We have 14 people total in the office, including me, to accomplish this for this wide area. And so we tend to be pretty busy these days.
Well, we want to hear about what you do to stay so busy. Let's get to the questions we have about water rights. What is a water right?
Well, Idaho is what is called a prior appropriation doctrine state. That's as opposed to a riparian doctrine state. And as such, the appropriation needs to be recorded. When a person has a water right, it has various elements involved. The person or entity that's doing it, a priority date when the use began or plans to begin, and a flow rate, a purpose of use, and often a quantity of water. So that water right and those elements help define what the appropriation is, and it authorizes diversion of use to of waters of the state of Idaho. When the state was formed and granted statehood by the United States, it provided that the state of Idaho has the control and regulation of the water within its borders for the good of the people.
So you distinguished between something in riparian areas. So water rights are about flowing water. Is that correct?
Water rights are any waters of the state of Idaho, whether it's groundwaters or surface waters.
So that includes wells?
That's correct. Okay. Wells tap into the groundwater resource.
Who can hold a water right?
Any person or entity who owns property in the state of Idaho or leases property from an owner, the citizen of the state, can appropriate a water right to put that water to a beneficial use.
Are we talking about use other than household use? So if you were going to build a house, would you need an application or water rights designation for that well for household use?
Idaho statute provides that a person who is going to appropriate groundwater only for a domestic use, defined in statute as for a home or single ownership homes, livestock and uses associated with livestock, and no more than a half an acre of landscaping, irrigation, if you will, can appropriate water by the permit process, or they are exempt from having to mandatorily do it. Later in the talk, I can approach that a little further and develop some alternatives and options for your listeners.
So domestic use, you might not have to apply for a water right. Who then typically does apply for water rights?
We do have domestic users appropriate water because they want that certainty. They go through an application process, it's permitted, and then they make their development and then provide us notice that they've completed. The department reviews, examines the use, and issues a license to a water right. Other alternatives could be that if there's an adjudication occurring or about to occur, a person could file a notice of claim in that adjudication, identify their elements of water right, and it would be reviewed, recommended to the court. It would be subject to protest by other water users, though it is likely would be decreed by the court and become a bona fide water right.
Outside of domestic use, well, we talked to people from the city of Sandpoint who are responsible for delivering water to Sandpoint. Would the city have water rights over their watershed? Is that something that they would have applied for?
Yes, indeed. The city of Sandpoint has water rights for diverting water from sources. It might be, it most likely is groundwater wells for their municipal supply for culinary water. But it may include appropriations of surface water rights to provide that they might treat and then provide to the public for use, or they could appropriate it for irrigating parks or such things.
And as we learned on this series a couple weeks ago, Sandpoint gets its water both from Little Sand Creek and then it pulls water out of Lake Ponderay. So they would have an agreement that they had water rights to pull out a certain amount of water?
They would have an appropriation that was made. And it's highly likely that it's recorded by a license with the Department of Water Resources. And it would have a priority date that would be somewhere in the spectrum of appropriations. They might have an early date for a small amount of water and a later date for a larger amount of water as the city has grown.
Well, how has Idaho dealt with water rights in the past, and is this changing?
Since before statehood, Idaho had allowed the territorial settlers to get an appropriation by diverting and using the water. And so it was kind of chaotic. A lot of homesteaders came in. There was quite the land rush back in territorial days and early state days, and people just basically, carved out a chunk of land and started diverting and using water. But since statehood, all uses except for domestic or even domestics could apply for and get a licensed water right. Couldn't do that during territorial because there wasn't the authority to provide those statutes. There were posted notices. There were all manner of types of appropriation back then. Well, a lot of the early development was done down in southern Idaho, and it's quite dry. And it was the surface resources and springs were way over appropriated, and as a consequence, there were hundreds and hundreds of stream adjudications. That is a court proceeding binding users of that stream to come in and file a claim, participate, prove when they homesteaded and used water, and then they might ultimately have gotten a decreed water right. In the interim, it was chaos. A lot of people set up shop, and they came late, and there wasn't water available for their use, and they ended up losing their homestead and having to move on to find greener pastures.
So given that northern Idaho has more water than southern Idaho, are we in that same situation that they are? Or are we the geographical difference, does that make a difference in the water rights?
These days, things are getting stickier and stickier. You might have noticed quite the influx of new residents. A lot of these folks are settling near streams and buying parcels and building houses and doing things. So there's getting to be more demand. A limited resource. There's only so much water in these small streams or even in the big rivers and lakes. It's starting to impact one another. Some people feel that they can go in and make a development without obtaining water rights first. Water right applications are a public notice process that anybody, any neighbor who feels like it would adversely impact their supply could file a protest to the appropriation request, and it would be administratively heard and perhaps resolved by negotiation and settlement, or the department may make an administrative order through a hearing process to, once the facts are developed during the hearing, on whether the appropriation should be allowed or not. Unfortunately, too many folks are building a pond or irrigating acres before they get a water right, and they have quite a bit invested, and they may not be very happy with the result. They may have invested a lot for no tangible benefit.
I have a question kind of to follow up. it's a little different than two different entities applying for water that may affect each other. I have heard that up Gold Creek, the water table is dropping, and some folks attribute it to the extensive logging operations up above them. Now, we don't know if that's really the cause, but are there certain activities that someone might be doing that would affect water tables that they'd have to apply for or that could be contributing to someone losing their water?
That is happening. It is, there's always been, you know, pretty extensive logging operations that come through every few decades and second cuttings. There is evidence that changing the forest canopy has changed the local hydrology and hydrography, you know, both above ground and below ground with respect to how the precipitation comes, accumulates, and also how it runs off. There is an effect, but there's not a lot of, the logging activity is really a land use issue as opposed to a water appropriation issue.
Yeah, that's a good picture. And then if someone finds out that someone is doing something that's affecting their water rights that they have applied for and received, appropriated, what can they do? Who helps them maybe change that picture so they don't lose their water table?
Well, that would likely be a civil matter between the residents, maybe as a group or individually, versus the person who may have affected their water supply, whether it's the surface water or the a groundwater scene. If the, you know, the logging is often going on private territory, but it's also a national forest activity, you know, recourse would be through the agency, if it's the Forest Service, or unfortunately it could be an action against a company.
Well, it's a good picture of why having those water rights appropriated makes at least something to fall back on. So thank you for that explanation.
That is very correct, and I appreciate you making that point, because a water right does provide for a certainty in your place in order within the prior appropriation doctrine. In times of shortage or with interference, people can rely on the data. Without a water right, then you really don't have much to stand on. A person who's appropriated water without a water right that could face penalties and sanctions by the state of Idaho through the Department of Water Resources for illegal diversion.
I want to get to two more questions. One is, what water rights do fish and other animals have for habitat?
Very good. Idaho law identifies an entity. They're called the Idaho Water Resource Board. They're separate but related to the Department of Water Resources. They are appointees, non-political group. Representatives from around the state are members of the board, and your local board member is Dale Van Stone, and I've had the pleasure of meeting him and working with him on several different elements. One is the Priest Lake Water Management Study that the board commissioned that should lead to some improvements up at Priest Lake. But I've also worked with him at Water Resource Board meetings, and he's a very fine gentleman to have on the board representing us in Northern Idaho.
Yes, he's done a lot of public service in this county.
The Water Resource Board has numerous minimum stream flow rights in surface water bodies in northern Idaho. a minimum stream flow water right is a water right. It is got a priority date. It cannot affect water rights that are senior to their priority date, but it is currently having an effect on junior users because of the dry cycles that we've been experiencing in the summertime. The flows have gone down in many major rivers and tributaries that they hold water minimum stream flows in. We have conditioned water rights that are junior to those that they are subject to prior water rights, including the minimum stream flows, and some of them actually identify gauging stations that are managed by the United States Geological Survey to measure the flows in the river, and appropriators are supposed to regulate their use during times when those flows are not being met.
We have one last question for you that I want to squeeze in here. Is it possible for another state, like Washington State, to claim water from Idaho?
Quite a lot of flow leaves Idaho and enters Washington. You know, examples of that, obviously, for your region is the Pendere River. However, once the water leaves Idaho, it's available to Washington to appropriate or not appropriate and restrict use. However, Washington doesn't have standing to regulate our use. Neither can Washington divert water in Idaho to deliver into Washington.
There's a lot to learn, and I have you've given me new directions to go here. So thank you for sharing your work and your knowledge with us today.
You're very welcome. May I have a closing statement here?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Hey, I'd like to point out that the Northern Idaho adjudication, while not commenced in your water basins up there, which are our administrative basins 96 and 97, we anticipate commencement in there and claims taking within about 5 years. I'd also like to alert your, not alert so much as inform your listeners that Idaho Department of Water Resource website has lots of information and a lot of documents available for review from the comfort of your home. If you have questions, please feel free to call our department office here in Coeur d'Alene at 208-762-2800 or to email this office at northerninfo@idwr.idaho.gov. Your questions and concerns can be routed to an appropriate person, and we're committed to responding and providing the information requested.
I'm so glad that you remembered to give us that contact information. That's one of the things we want to do, is help our listeners know where to go next to get their questions answered. And we're wrapping up now. Thank you, Doug, so much.
Well, fantastic. Thank you very much.
And that was not Molly McCann, but we're back in the KRFY studios. That was Doug Jones from the Idaho Department of Water Resources. And we did talk to him, and that was a recorded interview that we did over the phone. Like I said, we always learn something from these interviews. And just a reminder, we are live here in the KRFY studio at 88.5. And this is The Morning Show. And I'm Susie Prez, and I'm joined by Jean Girth for part three of the series Water is Life.
And now we are ready for our second recorded interview with Molly McCann from the Lakes Commission. Good morning, Molly McCann. The common theme in our series has been the importance of clean water for everyone and preserving our clean water in this area for people and for wildlife. We're looking forward to hearing about how the Lakes Commission fits into that picture.
Thank you, Jean. Thanks for having me.
How long have you been working at the Lakes Commission, and what attracted you to the job?
Well, I've officially been the coordinator for the Lakes Commission since 2016. Prior to that, I assisted with Lakes Commission activities and duties as the Lake Assist Coordinator, which was a program with Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District. And in that role, I was primarily educating the public on how to prevent non-point source pollution to our water bodies. And that is essentially unregulated pollution, such as primarily stormwater or pollutants in stormwater, spills, incorrect herbicide practices, that sort of thing. And then it is why the job was attractive to me. I've always been passionate about sustainability, and my degree is in landscape architecture, and I focused on sustainable design. But the Lakes Commission, and in working with them, I realized that they're looking at much bigger picture sustainability issues like lake levels, which is a system-wide, Columbia River system-wide issue, aquatic invasive species management and control, and fisheries. And then, you know, I absolutely love our lake. I grew up here. I have always felt incredibly lucky to have lived here my whole life. Those are the reasons.
Good reasons.
Molly, how and why did the Lake Commission get started?
Well, it really was before my time. It was in around 2003, but I believe it was spurred due to dropping kokanee numbers, which are the primary food source for bull trout. And then there were also, I think, proposed lake level operation changes that were going to occur. Sean Keough was very instrumental in creating the Lakes Commission. And it was really because we realized that decisions were being made at a federal level regarding lake levels, and we needed representation from North Idaho water users in that decision process.
You've covered this a little bit, but can you tell us more about the mission of the Lakes Commission?
Yeah, really, it's about trying to find a balanced approach to managing the lake. That would be lake levels, native fish species, the sports fishery, recreation, the economy, hydropower, flooding, just finding a balanced approach to the many reasons that the lake is being managed.
Well, what are some of the ways that you find the different avenues for balancing all of the needs of the lake, the fish, and things like that?
Well, really through too many meetings with too many agencies, but not really. Basically, there's just, we just want to find a compromise. And in any situation, it seems like there is room to have that discussion. There's ways that we can maybe benefit the ecosystem downstream if we just have the conversation about our issues here. Just starting the conversation helps determine whether there are ways that things can be managed so that everybody is happy.
Can you list the agencies that you work with?
For the state, we work with Idaho Department of Lands, Idaho Fish and Game, Department of Water Resources, Idaho DEQ. And then we're also often coordinating with the Army Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Reclamation, BPA, Bonneville Power Administration. There's a lot of them.
It sounds like the Lakes Commission is a coalition of all these groups that are concerned with the lake, how it's used, what it's used for. And in your mission statement, it says you're studying and investigating and selected ways and means of controlling the water quality and quantity as they relate to the waters of Lake Ponderay, the Ponderay River, Lake, Priest River. And does that include all of the watershed, the rivers flowing into and out of the lake?
Yes, it does. But the Ponderay Basin watershed in Idaho is our jurisdiction. But we do recognize that water doesn't have the same boundaries that we have. And so impacts that could be coming from upstream, we are concerned about, and then how our decisions downstream are affecting downstream users. So we ask to be at the table and during discussions with Montana and Washington, and hope that that's something they're receptive to. For instance, we're very concerned about finding effective emergency response to catastrophic spills, and that involves good coordination with Montana and Idaho DEQ and their local responders, and they need to be coordinated, want to be coordinating together on that issue. So we'd like to have that conversation. And then any decision we recommend for flow regime could impact downstream, and we'd like to have a conversation with them about how that might affect them. Downstream from us is basically an unregulated system directly below us. And so we're regulated by a dam, but downstream those dams are, well, not all of the downstream dams, but most of them are run of the river. So they have less control over their management.
And the Albany, is that how you say
Albany.
It? Albany Falls Dam is the one that regulates the level of the lake?
Right. They regulate the top 11 and a half feet of the lake. And they do that for hydropower and flood prevention.
What authority does the commission have?
Essentially, our authority is just as an advisory board to the governor's office. In that role, they trust our board to be at the table during discussions with all the various agencies I just voiced, the Fish and Game, DEQ, Water Resources, the Corps. They just trust that our local knowledge on the issues is being well represented at those meetings. And then we also recently have new authority to be at discussions related to the Columbia River Treaty, which is up for renegotiation, and the Columbia River Operation System. So that's taken us kind of in a new direction.
Well, back to the commission. Who is on the commission? Your website says they were handpicked by Governor Kempthorne in 2003. Have there been changes since then?
Well, actually, we still have the same commissioners that were appointed in 2003. We have five board members that are elected by the governor, appointed by the governor. And those five local residents are Ford Elsacer, Brent Baker, Mark Brinkmeyer, Linda Mitchell, and Craig Hill. And then we have a representative from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Attorney General's office, and one ex officio from Montana. And so those three positions tend to ebb and flow depending on changes with staff. So we currently don't have a fish and wildlife representative at the moment. And then our deputy attorney general is actually with the Idaho Department of Natural Resource Division, Daryl Early. And then our ex officio from Montana is Kate Wilson, who is actually the original Lakes Commission coordinator. And she is an expert in aquatic invasive species and is working in Montana for Department of Natural Resources in their aquatic invasive species program. So we hear upstream reports from her.
You've touched on this, but just to reiterate your main issues, because you are focused on, you've said weeds, lake mm-hmm. level.
Yeah, our foundational issue is lake levels. But then issues are ebbing and flowing all the time. But they often do tie back to lake levels. But we have always been heavily involved in aquatic invasive species, knowledge of the local invasives, promotion of the state watercraft inspection station. In fact, Kate, I believe, is the impetus for the first inspection station that the Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District started at the city beach. And then that kind of led, along with Representative Eric Anderson, to laws about invasive species in Idaho, and then the development of the whole entire invasive species program, inspection program. We also held numerous flowering rush digs, volunteer digs to dig rush, because there wasn't a chemical, the chemical or mechanical treatment method that was well understood. And so we just wanted to try to get a handle on it as best we could. So we held those in the spring and the fall. And then just lots of outreach and education on aquatic invasive species in general, how to manage it, how to manage weeds safely and correct herbicide practices. But yeah, we also pay a lot of attention to erosion. So we're concerned about FWIPO, which is the Flexible Winter Pool Operations, and that is the ability, that's why they drop the lake to its lowest elevation in the winter, and so that they can raise and lower the lake during the winter when there's a power demand. And that raising and lowering of the lake undermines the bank. It saturates the banks, and then you lower it, and so then it causes sloughing. And so we've always been opposed to that. And under the new Columbia River negotiations, we are asking for them to remove that from the operations. And then WAKES, of course, I've been paying close attention to as I'm on the Waterways Advisory Board for the county. That erosion, WAKES, erosion caused from WAKES is something that's within our control. And, people argue that storms are causing erosion as well, which is not in our control. But we can control the WAKES, and so I feel like it's a very worthy effort to encourage people to reduce that problem. And then fisheries, water quality, those are all issues that we're always working on.
There are many water uses that the lake level impacts, and you've touched on a bunch of those and some of the factors involved in controlling lake levels on Lake Pendere. You might expound on that a little bit more. But how do you reach compromise to benefit all of those uses?
Well, I think I talked about that a little bit earlier. And I can't say that we always reach a compromise, for one. That's just our goal. But the idea is, knowing that everybody has a certain position and a certain need to balance, but knowing there also needs to be a conversation started on what those needs are, and so that we can start talking about them and weighing them. And so, again, just asking to be at the table when decisions are being made, paying close attention to the fact that decisions are being made. So I just stay very apprised of all the issues as they arise. And I don't know if that answered the question, but...
Well, it does. It sounds like coordinating the issues and fully explaining them, delineating them so that all the folks at the table can understand them. Is that your job?
Yes.
Part of your job?
Yes, I would say that.
So communicating and understanding the issues...
Yes.
...really helps in solving problems.
Yes.
How does the commission advise the state of Idaho on such issues such as the Rock Creek mine or other pending permits?
Well, really it depends on the situation. But generally, we are asking to hear both sides of the issues during our public meetings. We have 4 public meetings a year, and we like to bring presenters from both sides of the table. So the public is aware of both sides, so we're aware of both sides. And then we often, again, as I've reiterated, are trying to find a compromise. Most situations, we're not taking a very specific stance, but we are trying to find that balance.
So you look objectively at who's at the table and then help folks understand in an objective way. It's like a negotiation. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned 4 public meetings per year. How do folks find out about those so that they can, if they want to, become informed?
I publish this on our website, which is the Lakes Commission. I think it's lakes-commission.com. And we publish it in the paper. The Daily Bee has been great at publishing those meetings. Really, that's it. I don't have a Facebook page, but we tend to have pretty good turnout.
Well, I think if folks are interested in going, they will find out. But with that, lakes-commissions.com, that is probably a good source to go sign up.
Yes, absolutely.
So next week, we're going to hear from Diane Williams with the Tri-State Council, who was with the Tri-State Council. They're not there now. But I understand that the council started some projects that you have continued. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, the main one I think... Diane might be referring to is the Water Festival, which was actually taken over by Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District. And the Conservation District administers the Lakes Commission funding, because our funding source needed an a fiscal manager. So I am in the same office with the Conservation District, and I've been involved with the Water Festival for years. So the Lakes Commission participates in the Water Festival. I'm an instructor for water quality and the watershed station, and I'm a steering committee member. But the Conservation District did take that program over. And I think it's been, I don't even know, 25, 30 years since the Water Festival has been going. It's an amazing youth education program. And then I believe the other project is the Lake Pend'Oreille Boater's Guide, which Tri-State started. And then we took over the printing of that and the updating of that. And it educates the public on aquatic invasive species, identification, clean boating practices, wakes, you know, rules on the water, and, you know, resources for the community on how to protect water quality. And we're trying to target the folks from out of town who aren't familiar with our area.
Sounds like a great education resource. You have your fingers in a lot of pies, and I want to thank you for coming. This was Molly McCann from the Lakes Commission.
Thank you for the work you do also, and thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the work you do. We really appreciate it. It's valuable to the public.
And again, that was Molly McCann from the Lakes Commission, and that was a recorded interview, and we are back live in the studios of 88.5 KRFY.
So join us next Wednesday, September 19th, for the final show of the Water is Life series. In this last piece, we will investigate the responsibility to protect our clean water and the regulations that are in place to do that. We have an interview with Dr. Shannon Williams from Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeeper. Our second interview is with Diane Williams, who will tell us about the work of the Tri-State Water Quality Council. And I think I said Shannon's name wrong, didn't I? I'm getting my Williams and my Williamsons mixed up.
Williamson.
It's Dr. Shannon Williamson from Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeeper and Diane Williams from the Tri-State Water Quality Council.